the extreme weather in parts of this country. A White House report out yesterday, Bill Blakemore reported on it here on the webcast, connected global warming to heavy rains and flooding like we've seen in the Midwest the last 2 weeks. But government scientists also say that as humans warm the atmosphere, we can expect more droughts and wildfires in the southwestern states. ABC's Brian Rooney reports on the current California heat wave.
The heat has been breaking records all week and possibly again today into the triple digits. It's the longest day of the year, and in the West, it's likely to be the hottest.
Oh, yeah, it is you.
That's ABC News, followed by Toots and the Maytals, and believe it or not, this is Radio Eco Shop.
It is the greatest scam in history.
Glenn Beck.
I'm amazed, appalled, and highly offended by it. Global warming. It is a scam.
Robert Kennedy Jr.
is to get involved in the political process and get rid of all these rotten politicians that we have in Washington, D.C. Who are nothing more than corporate toadies for companies like Exxon and Southern Company, these villainous companies that consistently put their private financial interests ahead of American interests and ahead of the interests of all of humanity. This is treason, and we need to start treating them now as traitors.
Top NASA scientist is making headlines with a dire warning: stop global warming or face extinction. James Hansen told Congress yesterday that the world has long passed the dangerous level for greenhouse gases, and he says the atmosphere can only tolerate this for a couple more decades without mass extinctions and ecosystem collapse.
NPR's unbeatable Diane Reams with James Hansen, NASA scientist.
Dr. Hansen, there is an article that was published today in The Guardian for America, which I'm sure our listeners can get online. Are you calling for criminal trials for energy company executives?
Yeah, I'm saying that in my opinion, CEOs of these large energy companies are guilty of crimes against humanity if they continue to dispute what is understood scientifically and to fund contrarians, and if they push us past tipping points that end up destroying many species on the planet and having a huge impact on humanity itself. And what I'm trying to do is draw their attention to how they're going to be viewed by their descendants if they don't begin to address this issue. They need to become energy companies instead of fossil fuel companies, but they somehow have decided that they're just going to stick to the old way of doing things.
At 7 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Reims Show.
On climate change, and so we're arresting them today, and we'd like all Canadians, if they see these criminals, to arrest them too, place them under citizen's arrest, because they're destroying our future and the country and the planet that young people are going to inherit is going to be a very hot one because of these two climate criminals. In fact, the United Nations and the World Health Organization is already saying that climate change is killing hundreds of thousands of people in the world today. And the numbers are only going to grow as time goes on. Hundreds of millions of people around the world are going to die due to climate change and the inaction of these climate criminals.
Quotable James Hansen on the Diane Rehm Show, set to Enya, A Day Without Rain.
What did you say to the Congress 20 years ago, and how is it received?
Well, I said that 1988 was likely to be the warmest year in the history of instrumental measurements, and I said that the Earth had entered a period of long-term warming. I could say with 99% confidence that it would continue to get warmer, and that this was almost certainly due to human-made greenhouse gases, and that this affected the probability of extreme events like heat waves and droughts. And since then, the events have proven those statements to be basically correct.
What can we as individuals be doing to diminish our carbon footprint on this planet?
Well, the most important thing is to influence the policies, because individuals can do a number of things which reduce their own personal footprints, but unless we have leadership, especially at the national level in the United States, which has not been responsible, we will not be able to solve the problem. But
you're saying that the next president must take action.
Yes, we are at I will present, and in a paper that's we've submitted, we make a very strong case that we're going to have to reduce CO2 to below 350 ppm. And that means we're going to have to get on a very different track within the next several years. And for practical reasons, it turns out that really means next year, because next year is a new administration. Next year is the time when they have to make decisions about what's going to follow the Kyoto Protocol and how the U.S. is going to get involved in that. So next year is an absolutely critical year.
James Hansen, he's a climate scientist. He is director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies.
One of the things that I'm recommending in the United States is we're going to need a national low-loss electric grid. And once we have that, the renewable energies can take over and provide most of and eventually all of the electrical energy. And India needs to look at such a model itself.
What would that cost to produce, Dr. Hansen?
Well, if you take account of the costs of the fossil, their impact on the environment, and the impacts of climate change, then the cost of renewable energies will not be higher than fossil fuels. There does need to be an investment in things like this electric grid, and I have not costed that. But it's like establishing the national highway system in the 1950s. It's the kind of thing that the next administration should take as one of its top priorities.
Hansen on Democracy Now!
NASA's top climate scientist, James Hansen, warned on Monday, the world has long passed the dangerous level for greenhouse gases in the atmosphere and that the Earth is nearing a tipping point. Hansen said, quote, we're toast if we don't get on a very different path. This is the last chance. He also called for the government to block the construction of new coal-fired plants. During an interview on NPR, Hansen called for the chief executives of oil companies to be tried for their role in spreading disinformation on climate change. It was 20 years ago this week when James Hansen first appeared before Congress to warn global warming had already started. The year of Hansen's original testimony, 1988, was the world's hottest year on record. Since then, 14 years have been hotter.
Back to the Diane Rehm Show on NPR.
The groups, the American Geophysical Union, the American Meteorological Society, the National Academy of Sciences, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is a United Nations international organization, all of these large panels of scientists have made very clear statements about the reality of global warming and its cause. So the of course, in the hundreds of thousands of scientists in the world, you can find a number of them which will say anything, and that gets a lot of attention because the fossil fuel industry has taken the position that it will give prominence to those contrarians. And that's one of the big problems we have, because now the public does not know that there's such a large consensus among the scientific community. Because it sounds like there's a debate, and there's really no real scientific debate. Global warming enhances both extremes of the hydrologic cycle, and that means not only heat waves and droughts and forest fires, which go with the higher temperatures at times and places where it's dry, but also at the other extreme of the water cycle, when the atmosphere is warmer, it holds more water vapor. And therefore, when you get rain, you get heavier rains and larger floods. And for example, where I live near the Delaware River, we've had 200-year floods in the last 10 years. And where I used to live in Iowa, we've had two 500-year floods in the last 15 years. Well, that's, you can't blame any one of these events and say that's due to global warming, but you can blame the frequency and the severity of these events on as one of the impacts, expected impacts of global warming.
But it does require that we have a moratorium on any new coal-fired power plants, and over the next 25 to 30 years, we're going to have to phase out those that exist. And this is going to become very clear within the next several years. So it is just plain silly to build a new one now, because you're not going to be able to grandfather these in and say, oh, we've got it, we can keep it. Uh-uh, it's not going to work that way. Once the government really understands how serious the problem is, these plants are going to have to go. So it just makes no sense to make another one now.
Forest fires will increase with global warming. And if you look in regions like Canada and Siberia, where there isn't a smoky bear putting out these things, we see big increases in forest fires as global warming is occurring. So there is a causal relationship. And another thing that is affecting it is with global warming, the latitudinal distribution of the overturning circulation, that means a rising motion in the tropics and subsiding motion in the subtropics, that circulation cell expands as the globe gets warmer. And it has expanded by about 4 degrees of latitude. That's about 400 kilometers. That's affecting the southern United States and the Mediterranean region, Australia, and parts of southern Africa, so that the fires you see in the southwest, in California, in the Mediterranean last year, that probably does have a relationship to global warming.
James Hansen, he's director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies.
The public may not be aware of it, but when a government scientist testifies to Congress, his testimony has to be approved by the White House. Now, the Office of Management and Budget, and they get in and look at the science and change if it's a controversial area like global warming. They will alter the statements if they don't like it. And
can you explain to us precisely how your statement was altered?
It was altered to make it appear that we really weren't certain about whether global warming was really involved in these climate changes. So that we could not make the connection between climate change and fossil fuel use. It's become clear from the history of the Earth that 385 ppm would end up with sea level several meters higher if we leave it in the atmosphere indefinitely.
So you're saying it's already too high.
We have already passed the dangerous level. We're going to have to take CO2 back to at least back to the 350 ppm level, and maybe likely even lower.
And how could we do that?
We could do that. We would have to, if you look at the fossil fuels, oil, gas, and coal, you see that oil is already half used. You know, that's why the price of oil is going up, because the supply is limited. And that oil is going to end up as CO2 in the atmosphere, because there's no way to catch it coming out of the tailpipe of a car. And there's no way to stop Russia and Saudi Arabia, the places that have oil, from selling and using their oil. But the biggest fossil fuel by far is coal. So if we would just make the decision, let's only use coal at power plants and capture the CO2 there and sequester it, that would allow CO2 to peak at somewhat over 400 ppm. And then we would have to draw it down, which we could do with improved agricultural and forestry practices. Right now, we're putting extra CO2 in the air by deforesting all around the planet and by agricultural practices that plow up the soil and allow CO2 to come out of the soil. There are ways, if we reforest areas which could be reforested, and if we would use practices such as biochar, work charcoal into the soil, that makes the soil more more fertile, and it stores carbon. So there are ways to do it, but it requires, the critical thing is, we can probably only get about 50 ppm out of the air that way. So if we just keep going down this path with more, with coal, more and more coal burning, which is what we've suddenly started to do in the last 5 years, then we're going to reach a point where we can't solve the problem. So we really need to recognize that. And it's hard for people to realize this because more than half of the global warming due to the CO2 already in the air has not occurred yet, because of the inertia of the system. It takes, because of the ocean being 4 kilometers deep, it takes it a long time to respond to the changes in atmospheric composition. So there's more warming in the pipeline. People don't notice the warming very easily because it's small compared to weather fluctuations, which are, can be 10 degrees or more from one day to another. But global warming of a few degrees is enough to have huge impacts if you leave it there for centuries.
So what you're saying is that we've reached that tipping point.
We are close to some critical tipping points. We've actually reached one. One of them is the Arctic sea ice. Last summer, the Arctic sea ice at the end of the summer was only 4 million square kilometers, which is only half of what it was 30 years ago. And we are unfortunately going to lose all of the summer sea ice within the next 5 to 10 years because of the warming that's in the pipeline already.
You're talking about Greenland as well.
No, I'm talking about the sea ice, the Arctic Ocean. Now, one of the reasons that that's important, if we do lose all, when we lose all of the Arctic sea ice, it will make Greenland much more vulnerable.
I see.
Greenland is already losing, last year, about 250 cubic kilometers of ice. And that's a lot more than it was a few years earlier. Well, I'm just connecting the dots. You know, what I found was that that unless you connect some dots, the public is not going to have the full information available. For example, one thing, there was a, when NASA was announcing that Arctic sea ice was dramatically being reduced, the NASA scientists were told they could not make connection between this and greenhouse gases.
You were told by Sean O'Keefe, NASA's director from 2001 to 2005, that you could not discuss human-made interference.
The responsibility for climate change depends on the gases that have been added to the atmosphere. And we are responsible for most of those excess gases.
When you say most,
I mean, in the case of carbon dioxide, the United States is responsible for more than three times more than the second biggest contributor. And China has now become the second biggest contributor to the excess CO2 in the atmosphere. And on an annual basis, they passed us last year. But it's the total that's up there that counts, and we're mainly responsible, so we have a responsibility to begin to address this, and China will certainly come along with us on the long run because they will suffer as much or more from climate change than we will, and they also are suffering from air pollution that goes along with the same sources. So we can get them to cooperate, but we need to take the first steps because we're mostly responsible. But I think it is simply a question of dollars. It's the oil and coal industries that are making big profits, and they don't want to see that disturbed. And I think it's pretty much that simple. CEOs of these large energy companies are guilty of crimes against humanity if they continue to dispute what is understood scientifically and to fund contrarians, and if they push us past tipping points that end up destroying many species on the planet and having a huge impact on humanity itself.
And does the Democratic chairman of the Select Committee agree with this statement by James Hansen? Here is Real News from YouTube.
Chairman Markey was asked to comment on this accusation after the testimony.
I think when history comes back to ultimately determine who is responsible, I think it will be that rather than accepting the science and making the modifications, they continue to fight this rear guard action. It's a pretty sad moment here. Where you know the technology is there, the warnings from the United Nations, you know that debate is over, except in the minds of these executives that if they can continue to cloud this debate, they believe they can buy more years. But as Dr. Hansen was saying, we don't have those years. So yes, I do agree with them.
Toots and the Maytals.
Do you believe I would take such a dig with me and give it to a police man? I wouldn't do that. Come down and put the charge on me. I wouldn't do that. Oh, I wouldn't do that. I'm not a fool to hurt myself, but I was innocent to what they've done to me. They were wrong. They were wrong. I give it to me. What's my number? What's my number now? Right now, somebody.
Now Hansen has gone even further, calling for the CEOs of fossil fuel companies to be tried for crimes against humanity.
They should be blamed because they have supported misinformation to the public.
Lots of media reaction. That was ABC. Here is Fox News.
One of the world's leading scientists on the Earth's climate today. Listen, for real, lock in with me on this one. This guy, he was live. See, he's live. We'll do it live. Today he called the chief executives of fossil fuel companies like Exxon or Peabody Energy to be tried for crimes against humanity. You hear me now? Try the executives of big oil companies for crimes against humanity. James Hansen spoke before Congress 20 years ago arguing that the greenhouse effect is changing our climate, and today he's back on Capitol Hill. This time, he claims oil companies are actively spreading doubt about global warming. Get this, the same way tobacco companies blur the lines between smoking and cancer. Think of it. The tobacco lines blur. We know what happened now with the cigarette companies and cancer. We know. And this guy's saying big oil is doing the same thing about global warming and that they ought to be tried for crimes against humanity. With us now, Judge Andrew Napolitano, Fox's senior judicial analyst. Take me 50 years in the future. You can't know if he's right or not, but you can tell us about this idea.
Well, right. I mean, this fellow was preaching global warming long before Al Gore was, and long before it became a political potato. And he basically said, if you keep up the way you're doing it, and it's not generated by the Earth, it's generated by individuals and corporations making bad and reckless decisions, people are going to get sick as a result of it. There's going to be too many pollutants in the air, in the atmosphere, in the earth, and in the water. Fast forward now to 20 years, where global warming is, shall we say, an essential part of the presidential campaign.
I'll say.
Both presidential candidates, even the Republican believe in it.
Admit it.
Now he's saying, look, I was
well,
right.
Well, they admit that what the scientists say is accurate. They're actually finally, everybody's on board finally.
Now he's saying, these guys knew about it. The oil companies knew about it. They intentionally made the atmosphere worse. As a result, people died. They should be prosecuted. Now, does
that
make sense?
That's a lot of dot connecting.
Correct. It doesn't make sense in America. In America, we don't try people for crimes against humanity, which are defined as causing mass numbers of death intentionally, purposefully, outside the context of war. So in other words, if a oil executive intentionally polluted the atmosphere for killing large numbers of people, that would be murder. If it were done in another country, it would be a crime against humanity. But the oil companies are highly regulated. And everything they do, if they follow the regulations, they do because the government lets them do it. Therefore, if the byproduct is someone is harmed because we refined oil into gasoline.
Uh-oh.
There can be no personal liability on the corporate officers as long as they follow the regulations that govern their business.
ABC.
We have got to a very dangerous point. We're close to pushing the climate system beyond tipping points, which where the dynamics of the system can take over and become out of our control.
Why is it that the scientists are all in on this? I mean, so many people are in on the global warming is real and we've got to stop it right now.
Glenn, you got to make a living, first of all. So you spent 10 years becoming a PhD in meteorology. You got a research job and you decide you're going to research the effect of human activity on global climate. And if you were to put out a research report that said not much and it doesn't seem too bad, you've probably wasted all your... They all have an agenda, an environmental and political agenda that said, let's pile on here. We're all going to make a lot of money. We're going to get research grants. We're going to get awards. We're going to become famous. And I guess that's what happened.
That was CNN's Glenn Beck with famous weatherman John Coleman. Next up, Robert Kennedy puts the boots to Glenn Beck.
Well, you know, I think what you've done is you've succeeded in taking a very serious issue and turning it into a clown act by parading a people onto your show who are phony scientists.
I do believe in global warming. I'm not sure if man is causing it, but I'm willing to listen to that side and be convinced of that. The biggest problem I have is I'm not convinced that things like the Kyoto Treaty are the right answer. However, sir, I've been asking on the air for a moonshot. Where is the politician, where is the president that will do like somebody famous in your family said, we're going to do this in 10 years, let's get off of oil.
But, you know, Glenn, you're saying that now, but what you've done on your show, as I said, you've turned the issue... Instead of getting serious people to seriously debate this issue on your show, and there's incredible scientists out there.
Yeah, I've had several of them on.
No, you've brought people on like Bjorn Lundberg and John Christie and these people from the Competitive Enterprise Institute and the American Enterprise Institute.
Sure.
Without identifying ever to your audience that these people are on the payroll of Exxon and
Sorry,
Southern Company.
Sorry, sir. You are incorrect. Every time I have them on, sir, the first question I say is, what is the percentage you get from big oil? So I should.
Well, if you want to ask me what your sentence should be, and I didn't call you a traitor.
No, you did. You called me a corporate toady, and then later in the speech you said all these corporate toadies should be treated as traitors.
John, it's the same thing. You inviting these guys on is the same thing as you inviting the, you know, tobacco scientists on to tell kids that it's okay to smoke tobacco because you don't believe that smoking, you haven't seen the connection between smoking and cancer.
Sir.
Well, you know what? The danger of global warming is so much more momentous than the danger of cancer from cigarettes, and the science is so much clearer than the connection between cancer and cigarettes, and you have not done the due diligence to educate yourself on that issue,
say,
and that
sir.
Is the big problem.
I am sorry
you get
to
up
say,
here,
sir.
And,
I
you,
agree,
and
I,
you have this clown
I disagree
act.
With you.
Don't let them see us. Don't tell them what we are doing. Are these the words of the all-powerful boards and syndicates of the earth? Don't let them see us. Don't tell them what we are doing.
This is Radio EcoShock. We'll be back in 30 seconds. Back with Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. We're taking a tussle with James Hansen and the whole debate about crimes, climate crimes. And here we go right back with Glenn Beck and Robert Kennedy.
You are trying to confuse the American public by being a contrarian, by being different, and by mouthing the corporate viewpoint.
I am trying to ask questions, sir. Honest questions. And yet you call me a fascist for asking questions. You, sir, and I know you probably, and I mean no disrespect.
Let me ask you a question. You asked me what the definition of fascist is.
Yes.
The American Heritage Dictionary defines fascism as the domination of government by corporate power. Benito Mussolini complained that fascism should not be called fascism. He said it should be called corporatism because it was the merger of state and corporate power. And you are one of the primary, you and John Stossel, Sean Hannity, and Rush Limbaugh have made yourselves the primary spokesman for the domination of corporate power over American government.
Sir, I got to tell you.
Why is everyone so upset with ExxonMobil? Well, let's find out with Democracy Now!
Those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Greenpeace, meanwhile, has been one of ExxonMobil's fiercest critics. The group has protested ExxonMobil's meetings and company gatherings, as well as its oil tankers and filling stations. Greenpeace has labeled ExxonMobil the number one climate criminal over its environmental practices. Joining us to discuss the story is Steve Steklow, senior special writer at the Wall Street Journal. He wrote the piece about Exxon's funding of Public Interest Watch, speaking to us from Boston. Also in Washington, D.C. studio, John Passacantando, executive director of Greenpeace USA. Representatives from ExxonMobil declined to appear on Democracy Now! A spokesperson said the company had nothing further to say on the topic besides what they said in the Wall Street Journal. Public Interest Watch did not respond to our interview request. Let's begin with Steve Steklow. Why don't you lay out the story?
Well, basically, a couple of years ago, this fairly little-known organization called Public Interest Watch started attacking a number of nonprofits and challenging their tax-exempt status. And their main target was Greenpeace. And they wrote a letter to the Internal Revenue Service accusing Greenpeace of literally money laundering and crimes and quite serious allegations. And then I got a tip a few months ago that Greenpeace had, in fact, been audited, and I started looking into it, and I discovered this connection with Public Interest Watch and their calls for the audit, and did some checking on their tax records, their tax records. They have never disclosed where they received their funding from, but it turns out that a year ago they filed tax records with the Internal Revenue Service, which showed that in 2003-2004 they received virtually all their money from ExxonMobil. So anyway, I started doing some checking and did a story on that. This comes against a backdrop where a number of conservative groups have been attacking nonprofits and NGOs over their tax-exempt status. There have been hearings on Capitol Hill. There have been a number of conservative groups in Washington who've been quite critical. So that's the backdrop of this.
And John Passacantando, when did the IRS first approach Greenpeace about the order, and how did you know about the connection between them and this watchdog group?
Well, we didn't know fully the connection until Steve from the Wall Street Journal called us, interviewing us about the story. But we got notified by the IRS this past December that we were to be audited. Several years prior is when we saw that Public Interest Watch report making all these erroneous claims about money laundering, very you know, extreme charges, with no factual basis for it. It was clearly propaganda. Nevertheless, this report was moved around mostly, I have to say, the Murdoch media chain. We were getting calls from reporters, but always linked to some kind of Murdoch operation. And we would explain. We would say, come in, look at the books. We can show you that this is completely erroneous. And you would have journalists who weren't interested in looking at the books. They weren't interested in refuting the claims in this report. So the report went out, and it went into what some would call sort of the right-wing echo chamber. And it bounced around the world, never, honestly, in a reputable publication. We stayed on it. We always had, were willing to counter the charges. Then we got some calls from a subcommittee to the House Ways and Means Committee, saying they wanted to look into this more carefully, and we gave them. And now that committee was willing to look at the further information. We gave them full disclosure. They came no further. And then this past December, we got the letter from the IRS saying we were indeed being audited, and the IRS was in our offices for 3 months. I mean, it's important to know that we came out of this with flying colors. Greenpeace, in the auditor's words, and I have to say, I think it's inappropriate the way the IRS came in, but then the audit was done professionally, and the auditor told me this is as clean an operation as I've been in. You guys were transparent and forthcoming, and you should be proud of the way you keep your books.
How did the IRS come in when you say it was inappropriate, just in terms of what sparked this whole audit?
Yes, my opening question to the auditor was, were we a random selection? If we're a random selection, that's appropriate then. That's the way the IRS should work. There should be that level of scrutiny. But the IRS should not be a tool of the government to silence its critics. The government meaning the Bush administration and ExxonMobil, who have been tied at the hip in denying, refuting the reality of global warming. Greenpeace has been countering that, been pushing hard on that. ExxonMobil and the Bush administration have been the real gridlock on action to stop global warming. So when the auditor came in, one of the very first things he said was, he looked at a picture that we had of a peaceful protest at an Exxon station, where our people were occupying an Exxon station, and he said, this illegal activity has got to stop. And I said, in fact, there is a long precedent of nonprofits using a small amount of their resources to do peaceful activities such as this, from Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement right up through Randall Robinson's and Trans-Africa work. And I said, I don't think you have your facts right, but we'll give you all the information you need. And, of course, we came out of this with flying colors, but the auditor did tell us at the end that the IRS was ultimately responding to this report from Public Interest Watch. In other words, it was a political audit. He said this was indeed a political audit. The lawyers that we worked with to get through this audit told us this has not been happening until the Bush years. The political referrals were not being listened to at the IRS, that indeed they are now. So this is a resurgence of this kind of activity, not seen since Richard Nixon was using the IRS to audit his enemies list.
Well, Steve Steklow, I'd like to ask you, the writer at the Wall Street Journal who broke this story, clearly there has been more public concern or attention around these types of audits. Obviously, the NAACP had a much publicized interaction with the IRS as well. Who runs Public Interest Watch, and what are the other kinds of organizations that they have attempted to raise concerns about?
Well, Public Interest Watch was founded by a guy named Michael Hardiman, who I interviewed, and he's a Washington-based lobbyist. He's a Republican. He's worked for he's lobbied on behalf of a number of organizations, including the American Conservative Union and the American Trucking Association. He started the organization in 2002, but it didn't seem to really gain steam until 2003 when, the records show he started to get a lot of money, almost all of it from ExxonMobil. In fairness, they didn't simply go after Greenpeace. They went after a number of groups, and some of them wouldn't, they included, for example, the American Heart Association. But he did go after a number of environmental groups, and one of them was a group down in North Carolina called Dogwood Alliance. They also called for an audit an IRS audit of Dogwood Alliance, questioning its tax-exempt status. And the head of that organization told me that, in fact, they, too, were audited back in 2004. And once again, the IRS found that there weren't problems enough to merit taking away their tax-exempt status. They also went after a few others, but again, of the there were at least two that were audited. Now, whether the IRS, in fact, audited Dogwood Alliance, the person there believes that it was because of Public Interest Watch. However, she said that unlike in the Greenpeace case, the auditor said who was there, who was local, said he didn't know what had prompted the audit, but they're convinced. And after I talked to Hardiman, he claimed credit for it. Although I have to say, when I first interviewed him, he was not aware that the IRS, in fact, had audited either Greenpeace or Dogwood Alliance, and seemed a little surprised. But then when I spoke with him a second time, seemed quite proud of the fact and said it showed what great work he did.
I wanted to turn to John Pascotondo, head of Greenpeace USA, and read an excerpt of a piece that came out last year in Mother Jones magazine by Chris Mooney called Some Like It Hot. It's about some 40 public policy groups that have this in common. They seek to undermine the scientific consensus that humans are causing the Earth to overheat, and they all get money from ExxonMobil. And Chris Mooney writes, Mother Jones has tallied some 40 ExxonMobil-funded groups that either have sought to undermine mainstream scientific findings on global climate change or have maintained affiliations with a small group of skeptic scientists who continue to do so. Beyond think tanks, the count also includes quasi-journalistic outlets like TechCentral.com, a website providing, quote, news analysis, research, and commentary that received $95,000 from ExxonMobil in 2003, a FoxNews.com columnist, and even religious and civil rights groups. In total, the groups received more than $8 million between 2000 and 2003. ExxonMobil chair and CEO Lee Raymond serves as vice chair of the board of trustees for AEI, that's American Enterprise Institute, which received $960,000 in funding from ExxonMobil. The AEI Brookings Institution Joint Center for Regulatory Studies, which officially hosted writer Michael Crichton, received another $55,000. When asked about the event, the center's executive director, Robert Hahn, who's a fellow with the AEI, defended it, saying climate science is a field in which reasonable experts can disagree. By contrast, on the day of the event, the Brookings Institution posted a scathing critique of Crichton's book, State of Fear. Can you talk about the power of ExxonMobil? And I have to say, I wish they were joining us to talk themselves.
Yes, well, and the reason they're not joining us is their power has been behind the scenes. Their power has been to keep their name off of things, but fund a whole range of groups that literally go out there and deceive the public in the name and use names like Public Interest Watch or some kind of independent think tank. They are Exxon tools. They're funded by Exxon to do Exxon's bidding, which is to continue to confuse the public in their knowledge of the enormity of what's coming on us on global warming. I believe that when we're past this era and we are indeed reorienting our economy to stop global warming, when we ask why did we wait so long, what was the reason for the delay, we will know that it was ExxonMobil that held the world back. What Greenpeace's main role in this, in addition to our protests of ExxonMobil around the world, we built a database to delineate all the money that we could find from ExxonMobil to these groups that are essentially out there lying about global warming. And we put it all online. It's called ExxonSecrets.org. And it's essentially a website for researchers. And all our documentation is on it. So people can look at it and then go actually find the hard copies of this data and prove it to themselves. Exxon has intentionally spent millions of dollars to deceive the public, to lure us into this complacency so we wouldn't worry about global warming, all in order to protect their short-term oil profits. Meanwhile, this storm of damages from global warming is building in strength, and we have an administration and a Congress that have looked the other way and have been able to sort of count on a confused American public, and that has been the tragedy of this.
Exxon, of course, can afford to spend that money, having just recently reported $36 billion in profit last year, the greatest profit of any corporation in the history of the world, and some larger than the budgets of 123 countries in the world. Your organization has continued to have a major confrontations or criticism of ExxonMobil, obviously, over the years. What was the latest in terms of your organization's having to deal with them?
Well, what we've continued to do is expose them. When people have leaked us papers, there have been a number of times we have continued to show this link between ExxonMobil and the misinformation in the news. There was an employee at the Council on Environmental Quality who was editing one of the EPA officials, career official Rick Piltz, who was writing about global warming in a required report coming out of the Bush administration, coming out of our government, and this fella, Phil Cooney, was editing out all the references to global warming and softening everything. This was revealed, this was broken on 60 Minutes this past Sunday evening. This particular fellow worked for the American Petroleum Institute before he went into the Bush administration. And then when he got caught red-handed editing out this global warming reality from this government report, he was then hired by ExxonMobil. So we spend a lot of time tracking these people, who they are, where they've come from, where they've gone, and all roads do lead to ExxonMobil.
Interesting. Also, Mother Jones in that piece reported that less than a month after President Bush took office, an ExxonMobil lobbyist named Randy Rendall sent a memo suggesting certain climate experts from the Clinton administration should be, quote, removed from their positions of influence. A year later, the Bush administration blocked one of the scientists, Robert Watson, from his post at the Intergovernment Panel on Climate Change.
Absolutely right.
What's that, John?
Our point is that ExxonMobil has played an unbelievably aggressive role. Many of the other big oil companies have backed off of this, don't want their integrity impugned by getting involved in this kind of nefarious work, essentially lying to the public. ExxonMobil has had a very strong hand in this and has worked very closely with this White House to continue to confuse the American public so it can continue to stall actions to stop global warming.
Well, we want to thank you both very much for being with us, John Passacantando, head of Greenpeace USA in Washington, and Steve Steklo, senior special writer with the Wall Street Journal. We will link to the piece on our website, democracynow.org. This is Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute.
Now that was real investigative reporting. It was done on March 24th, 2006. What would we do without Democracy Now!, and why can't the major networks dig into these things?
You're listening to Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
ABC.
California is in the second year of a drought, and weather patterns are changing. 50 years ago, California had an average of 2 extreme heat days a year. Now it's 24 days, and the duration of heat waves is growing longer.
Floods and drought and terrible storms. Why can't the weatherman ever say global warming? Those words just don't seem to make it. Well, here is Democracy Now! Again, and it's Amy Goodman's personal podcast.
Weather reports are missing the story. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With my weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. The floodwaters are rising, swamping cities, breaching levees. Tens of thousands are displaced. Many are dead. Now, I'm not talking about Hurricane Katrina, but about the Midwest United States. As the floodwaters head south along the Mississippi, devastating communities one after another, the media are overflowing with televised images of the destruction. While the TV meteorologists document extreme weather with their increasingly sophisticated toolbox, from Doppler radar to 3D animated maps, the two words rarely uttered are its cause: global warming. I asked former Energy Department official Joseph Rahm, now senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, about the disconnect.
Part of the reason is that the people who write about global warming
for most newspapers and TV are not the same people as those who tend to cover weather. You know, the New York Times has a reporter who covers global warming, and he's quite good. But he is not the guy who goes to Iowa to write about the flooding there. So I think this is a failure of the editors at newspapers whose job is to sort of assign reporters and look at the big picture. In general, the media is covering this as this is all sort of unconnected events. Just regular weather, maybe gone a little wacky. But in fact, the scientific community has predicted for more than two decades now that as we pour more heat-trapping greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, the planet would heat up, and that would redistribute water. If you heat up the planet, then places that are kind of arid will lose soil moisture and they'll become drier. Whereas you heat up the planet, you evaporate more water, and areas that are wetter will tend to see more intense rainfall and deluges and earlier snow melts, and all that will lead to flooding. So what we're seeing is exactly what scientists have been telling us would happen because of human emissions.
Perry Beeman is an award-winning investigative reporter for the Des Moines Register. He's former president of the Society of Environmental Journalists. He spoke from his flood-wrecked city of Des Moines.
Not even a few weeks before this all happened, we're in the middle of doing a climate change series that's going to run over the year, and I had just examined that very issue. In fact, we had a double truck or two-page, spread graphic talking about the different things that would happen and pointing out just what the previous speaker has said, that you would expect more torrential rains. We had Cedar Rapids had 12 inches of rain in 10 days leading up to this event. And I believe that the eastern part of the state was averaging 10 to 15 inches of rain since May 15. We had a tornado in Parkersburg in the eastern part of the state that killed 8 on May 25th. And on June 13th, we had one at the Boy Scout camp in Little Sioux that killed 4 from Nebraska and Iowa. What has happened here is consistent with many scientists' view of what global warming will mean in the Midwest.
So if the disasters that follow one another, from hurricanes to tornadoes to flooding, are consistent with global warming, why aren't the networks, the weather reporters, making the link? Dr. Heidi Cullen, a climate expert on the Weather Channel, created a stir in late 2006 when she wrote in her Weather Channel blog, "If a meteorologist can't speak to the fundamental science of climate change, then maybe the AMS, American Meteorological Society, shouldn't give them a seal of approval. If a meteorologist has an AMS seal of approval, which is used to confer legitimacy to TV meteorologists, then meteorologists have a responsibility to truly educate themselves on the science of global warming," she wrote. As reporters stood in waist-high water in the flooded downtowns of major American cities, President Bush basked in the sunlight in Washington, D.C., urging Congress to lift the ban on offshore oil drilling and to open up the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling. While regular people are getting hit in the wallet at the gas pump, paying now more than $4 per gallon for gasoline, the oil, coal, and gas industries are reaping huge rewards and applying pressure to open up protected spaces for resource extraction.
Oh, let's give the other side a chance. Here's Fox News with Senator Imhoff.
Meanwhile, hot air about global warming could be helping to heat up the earth. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. speaking at Al Gore's Live Earth concert, saying in part, and I quote, "The most important thing you can do is to get involved in the political process and get rid of all of those rotten politicians who are nothing more than corporate toadies for companies like Exxon and Southern Company. This is treason, and we need to start treating them as traitors." Reaction now from Senator Jim Imhoff, a Republican from Oklahoma and a noted global warming skeptic. Senator, if I'm reading Robert F. Kennedy Jr. correctly, you're a traitor.
Well, I don't know, Neil. You know, Robert Kennedy calling me a traitor would be like me calling Robert Kennedy a patriot. Let me tell you what's happening. These are not good days for Bobby Kennedy and not good days for Al Gore. Everything is going the wrong way for him. These concerts, as you know, Neil, were a huge flop. in the UK, in Sydney, Australia, in Washington, D.C., in New York City. They're just a miserable failure. And did you see the Rasmussen poll that came out right after the concerts? They said only 22% of the people in America followed the concerts. At the same time, 56% of the people were following Scooter Libby, and 80% were following immigration. So, you know, in the science, I'm going to be doing a talk on the Senate floor in just a short while, and talking about the new science that is in where they were on the other side, they are now skeptics. Yeah, we are going through some natural cycles right now, but no longer are they blaming it on human gases.
Robert Kennedy at Live Earth, July 2007.
If, on the other hand, we want to do what they've been urging us to do on Capitol Hill, which is to treat the planet as if it were a business in liquidation, convert our natural resources to cash as quickly as possible, have a few years of pollution-based prosperity, we can generate an instantaneous cash flow and the illusion of a prosperous economy, but our children are going to pay for our joyride. With denuded landscapes, with poor health, with huge cleanup costs, and with climate chaos, which is going to amplify over time, and that they will never be able to pay. Environmental injury is deficit spending. It's a way of loading the costs of our generation's prosperity onto the backs of our children. Climate change is upon us. Its impacts are going to be catastrophic, and we are causing it. The good news is we have the scientific and technological capacity to avert its most catastrophic impacts. We only need the political will. If we raise fuel economy standards in our automobiles by 1 mile per gallon, we generate twice the amount of oil that's in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. If we raise fuel economy standards by 7.6 miles per gallon, we yield more oil than we now import from the Persian Gulf. We could eliminate 100% of Persian Gulf oil.
America is addicted to oil.
God, no. I should have been gone. God, no. I should have been gone. And I wouldn't have been here down on the killing floor.
That's Howlin' Wolf with Killing Floor. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, what say you? Who are the climate criminals? Who led the wrecking crew? Can we reform ourselves? I'm Alex Smith. Write me anytime, radio@ecoshock.org. Go ahead and visit our website for the words of the world scientists and authors, ecoshock.org. I have a bunch of links for you in the blog for this show, dated June 26th, 2008, like the complete testimony of Dr. James Hansen to the Select Committee on Energy Independence and Climate Change in a PDF format, and some more goodies. So far, I have not been able to find a single audio or video of this historic speech by Hansen anywhere on the net. Strange, isn't it? The blog address is www.ecoshock.org/podcast. This week we had fun with media. Next week, another giant of the climate field, Dr. Andrew Glickson of Australia, will deliver a full hour-long lecture titled A Warning from the Past. Glickson studies impact craters, you know, hits from outer space, and volcanoes, and past greenhouse worlds. He doesn't like our odds as things are going. Let's find out more next week, and as always, I appreciate you lending your brain to this collision of human striving in the natural world. We go out with the ghost of Bob Marley saying, stir it up.